It's still here. A little pile of rocks that we left here to remind ourselves, no more islands. Time to do something different. Time to move in some new directions. Time to think about the church differently. And well, to help us along this journey, last week we met the Croods. Now, yes, indeed, they are a family of cave people. And I do realize I am pushing the boundaries here, but there is a point to everything that we always do. And you have to understand, as cave people, the Croods have spent their life following a set of rules. And it's a good thing, because those rules have prolonged their survival. But last week, as we hinted, that's all about to change. You see, because their world, at least their world as they know it, is about to come to an end. Everything is about to change. So last week we met the family, but there is another character, and I guess technically it's two characters, but another character we need to kind of introduce you to so that we can take this journey with the Croods. And this guy's name is Guy. Easy enough to remember. And to appreciate the story, you have to understand that, well, Guy is a little different from the Croods. You see, the Croods work on strength. Guy works on ideas. The Croods, well, they live in the cave in the darkness. Guy has decided to follow the light. The Croods are just simply trying to survive until the next day. Guy wants to live. And Guy has this belief that the world is coming to an end. Now, how does he know? Well, he says he saw it. He's from an experience where somewhere in his past, his world, he saw the earth shaking and things splitting apart. And so he sees this, and so he's a little afraid of what's going to happen because he's watched it all before. And so Guy makes a very smart decision. I'm going to head for the mountains. But his real focus is on, what am I going to do tomorrow? I mean, if I stay right here, Tiger Girl, if I stay right here, eat, you do understand this is all going to end and there's nothing we can do about it. It is going to change. So he makes her an offer, doesn't he? He holds out his hand and says, come with me. And she's got a lot of reasons, and we'll talk about that probably in a few weeks, of why at first she can't come with them. But this morning, I want to start talking about this term that we introduced last week, evolving faith. How our faith has to change if we are indeed going to fulfill our mission to go out and reach the world. And last week, when we talked about evolving faith, we talked about how we have to go beyond just the set of rules. It can't just be about the rules. It can't just be about a set of traditions. We have to move a little bit beyond. It just has to be an instruction manual to it has to be a step of faith where we just live our life and we start reaching people. But there's something else that has to change. If our faith is truly going to evolve, for our faith to evolve, we have to have a clear understanding of tomorrow. Now, I know what tomorrow is. I mean, I know how it works. We'll go through today, and I'm here at church, and when I get home, I'll probably watch a couple of football games, and I'll have some food and play with the kids a little bit, and eventually we'll get everybody tucked into bed, and I'll get to bed, and then I'll wake up, and it will be tomorrow. Actually, no, it won't be. You know what it'll be? It'll be today. You see, because tomorrow really never ever gets here, because as soon as I get to tomorrow, it becomes today. So I'm not talking about the physical, how do I just survive until I wake up the next morning? How do I go about doing my daily routine? I am talking about the ultimate tomorrow, and I want to make sure we have the right perspective of what it is tomorrow means to the church. So there are quite a few ways that we approach this idea of tomorrow. And so I want to look at four ways that we approach tomorrow, and then I want you to kind of decide, what do you think is the best way to approach it? So the first way that we live for tomorrow is we live in fear of tomorrow. Revelation chapter 12, verses 12 through 14. I watched as he opened the sixth seal. There was a great earthquake. The sun turned black like sackcloth made of goat hair. The whole moon turned blood red. The stars in the sky fell to earth. The figs dropped from the fig tree and were shaken by strong wind. The heavens receded like a scroll being rolled up. And every mountain and island was removed from its place. Then the kings of the earth and the princes and the generals and the rich and the mighty and everyone else, both slave and free, hid in caves among the rocks of the mountain. And I read those verses and it sounds a lot like what Guy was describing, doesn't it? It sounds like his biggest fear come true, because it says that the moon's going to change colors and the sun's going to go dark and the earth's going to shake and it's going to split open. And so it makes sense that you hear all of that, he's afraid. He's afraid. He's looking at tomorrow and he's scared of it, because like a child that's done something wrong, you've had this experience before. I know I have. I mean, it's just one of those things you do as a kid. You do something and you know you've done something wrong. And what is your main goal? I got to fix it before mom and dad get home. I mean, my sisters and I, we fought profusely and we did house damage along the way. But I want to let you know something. When we were fighting and we caused damage, the fighting stopped because we realized we had to become allies to fix the problem before mom and dad got home. Because we were afraid what would happen when mom and dad got home and they realized what we were doing. And a lot of times that's the way we live for our tomorrow. We're afraid of this day that God's going to come back and that we're going to be standing face to face with God. And so we live our life in fear. And well, as you read through Revelation, you find out there's a problem with living in fear. Verses 15 through 17 says, "Then the kings of the earth and the princes and the generals and the rich and the mighty and everyone else, both slave and free, hid in the caves among the rocks and the mountains. They called to the mountains and the rocks, 'Fall on us and hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne and from whom the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of their wrath has come, and who can withstand it?'" You see, when you live in fear, fear causes you to hide. I mean, you would think you see the all-powerful God and you see everything happening just as he said it was, and maybe there would be some hallelujah and some praise the Lord, but no, they're afraid. And instead of running out to greet him, instead of rolling out the red carpet, instead of saying, "Welcome back, we're so glad," they go and they hide. And they get to the point that these people are just, well, these people are not seeking God. They're just flat out afraid of him. They don't want to be anywhere near him. And they're begging not for grace, not for mercy. They begin to beg just to be put out of their misery because they are afraid of what comes next. Because you understand at that point, the clock ends and there is no tomorrow as we understand it. There's only a tomorrow as God understands it. And the absolute truth is, these people that have lived their life in fear, lived their faith in fear, it never evolved beyond the relationship of God is just somebody there to punish me. I am afraid of him. They are afraid of the Lamb. Now, I've been around sheep before. That's another story for another day. And really, they're not very intimidating creatures. They're not. I mean, they're kind of fat and fluffy. They do smell bad. But the little baby sheep, the lambs that come out, they're kind of cute. They'd make good pets if I actually like pets. But there's nothing to be afraid of. But these people see the Lamb as something to be afraid of. And I'm afraid sometimes that our church lives in this mindset that, well, we're afraid of tomorrow, and so we're trying to live by the rules just so when Daddy comes home, we won't have him upset at us, and he'll pat us on the head and say, "Good job." But if you live that way, then your faith has a stopping point, and you can never leave the island. Because off the island, things get scary. So we can't live in fear of tomorrow, but there's another way that many of us live our life. Sorry, I skipped a slide. If all we have managed is to be afraid, then we have to understand that we can't actually live in God's presence. See, I'm getting too excited here. This idea that we can't live in God's presence, we can't stay around God, because if I'm afraid, I don't want to be anywhere near him. So now the second way that we live our life. Sometimes, a lot of times, we live like there's no tomorrow. This is what it says in Luke chapter 12, verses 16 through 20. And he told them this parable. Now this is Jesus. He's the he. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he says, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store up my surplus grain, and I'll say to myself, don't you worry about people that talk to themselves. You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry, but God said to him, you fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you, and then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? Now again, I want you to see the idea of living for tomorrow is not just living for the next day. Because this man, he had worked very hard. He did. Man, he put in the hours. I'm guaranteeing you that crop that came in did not just happen. I mean, he didn't wake up one morning and say, ooh, look, it just came out of nowhere. He had been out there and he had plowed the field and he had planted the seeds and he had weeded it. And he had been out there and he had plowed it again and made it work up. And he had tended to it and chased the deer away and chased the bunny rabbits away. And he had done all the hard work. And, well, his hard work had some success. It said he had an abundance of success. There was a whole bunch. As a matter of fact, when they brought it all in, and he started stuffing this stuff into this little storage shed, he's like, man, my shed's not big enough. It isn't going to hold all the stuff that I've got. What am I supposed to do? Well, it's amazing. He doesn't think off of the island. He thinks about, oh, wait a minute. I have a plan. I'm going to tear down my old stuff, and I'm going to build new stuff so I can keep stuffing stuff inside of my stuff. So we just keep going, and we keep going, and we keep going. And I guess I can think about the idea that, well, he says his success was so he could take it easy. I mean, now he's got enough. I don't have to go out and plant the crops anymore. I don't have to tend to the fields. I don't have to chase the bunny and the deer. They can have it. I am going to retire, and I'm going to take it easy because God has blessed me so much that it's just time to, well, sit, drink, and be merry, because life is good. There is no tomorrow, folks. I've got everything I need right here today. Everything is in my possession. That is until, guess what? There actually is a tomorrow. Something actually does happen. You see, there was a tomorrow that he never, ever gave a thought to. He never, ever considered the fact that this life is temporary and there is another tomorrow that exceeds the days of the week, that exceeds the calendars, exceeds the two-hour delays that they put in your way to go to school. There is something else besides tomorrow. And when Jesus talked about this man, he says, you know what? You're a fool. That sounds kind of harsh. But you need to understand, Jesus was not condemning the fact that he worked hard. There was nothing wrong with working hard. He was not condemning the fact that he was successful. He didn't even condemn the fact that he stored it up. It was just the fact that this man had this mentality that I have enough. My stomach is full. My house is warm. I do not need to consider tomorrow. Philippians 3:19 puts this idea out this way. Their destiny is destruction, their God is their stomach, their glory is in their shame, and their minds are set on earthly things. Because there is no tomorrow. Everything is in the here and now. It says that it leads to the destructive behavior. You really think the man was just going to sit, eat, drink, and be merry? Oh, please. Eventually that gets boring. So you have to put the money to use doing something. And since there is no tomorrow, I have to live like there. I'm going to get the most out of today. And we know that leads to very destructive behavior. It says he made us focus his own desires. What I want out of life. Let's not worry about the fact that I could have used that plethora of crop. I could have used it to meet some real needs out there. I just want to fulfill my desires. The allows us to take pride in our sin. Man, I can sit there and it's all good because obviously there's nothing wrong with me because look how much God's blessed my life. And there is no tomorrow. It sets our sights on things that will never, ever last. I appreciate Jesus' question. He looked at the man and said, so when there actually tomorrow comes and you're no longer here, all this stuff that you stuffed inside of your stuff and you made, built, whose is it then? And he never gives the man a chance to answer. Because you know what the point fact is? It's not important who it belongs to. Because tomorrow has arrived. And all the stuff that I've gained living like there is no tomorrow won't fulfill that tomorrow. So I can't live my life in fear of tomorrow. And I can't live my life like there is no tomorrow. But you do understand, I also can't live life like there is only tomorrow. Now, what does that mean? Well, let's take a look at Matthew chapter 24, verses 42 through 44. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know what day your Lord will come. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what time the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would have let his house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Now this passage of Scripture is near and dear to everybody's heart because he's talking about the end times. He's talking about the end. Dun, dun, dun. He's talking about that moment when, you know what? The end is going to come, and it says, you know, be ready for it. There's nothing wrong with being ready. We take vacations every year, and you know what? We don't wait until the night before to start packing. I'm not the kind of vacation person that when I'm going to take a trip, I don't just get in the car and drive and decide when it's time to stop, I'm going to find a hotel. I make reservations, and I pack suitcases. And I make a plan, and I have an itinerary, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being ready. But I think we miss the point. You see, sometimes I think we become so obsessed with the end. And we begin to focus on that, and as we become obsessed with the end, we forget that, guess what? It ain't happened yet. We ain't there yet. You see, we stop reading at verse 44, but really we need to go all the way to verse 51 because the lesson isn't in the fact of being prepared. The lesson is like this. Who then is faithful and a wise servant, whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household and to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. Truly, I tell you, he will put him in charge of all of his possessions. But suppose the servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a long time, and then he begins to beat the fellow servants and eat and drink with the drunkards. The master of that servant will come on that day. He does not expect him at the hour he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, that sounds a little more scary. See, because Jesus' lesson isn't that we're supposed to be preparing ourselves for tomorrow, because that tomorrow will take care of itself, provided you stop looking at the sky, waiting for Jesus' return. Now, this does not mean that we're supposed to be ignorant, and we should not be celebrating that we are looking forward to that day, but understand, this can't be our focus. It can't be. Because you know what? There isn't a thing I can do about it. As a matter of fact, if Jesus came and told me, hey, Barry, at this date, this is the day, this is the time, this is the hour, this is the moment. You do realize what I would do with that information, right? Let's be honest. I'd live anywhere I wanted to until I get close to that date, time, moment, and special moment, and then I would confess everything so I could punch my ticket and be on my way. The whole reason we don't get the time and the date and the month and all that kind of stuff is because Jesus doesn't want that to be our focus. Not that it's not something we should know nothing about, but it can't be our main focus. You see, he gave us the information to tell us, I'll be back. Count on it. As a matter of fact, here are the things you can look for to know I'm coming back, so it's good that we know those things, but I will be back. Sorry, I'm not doing the Schwarzenegger voice, but he says, I'm going to come back. And then he goes on to tell us, and when I come, I want to find the church that is busy serving the kingdom. That's important. Not a church that is busy trying to figure out when are you coming. Not a church that's busy trying to figure out when is it over. Not somebody that is only looking for tomorrow, but somebody that is preparing for tomorrow by serving today. That's an important aspect. You see, not doing the thing. He wants you to be doing the things I told you to do. I love the list. Feeding people, taking care of people, serving other servants, cooperating together. Jesus had this idea that the church was supposed to be there for one another, and the church was supposed to be there for its community and for the world to seek and save the lost. There's this old saying, and I know it's old because my mom told it to me, and she said her grandma told it to her, so it must have been around for a long time. Sometimes in the church we get so heavenly minded that we're absolutely no earthly good. We get so focused on tomorrow and living only for when my end is here that we forget about the fact it's not here yet. It's not over. The ground is not shaking. The sun is not changing. You know what, though? There are still a lot of people out there that are looking and seeking, and that needs to become our focus. So I can't live in fear of tomorrow, and I can't live like there's no tomorrow, and I can't live like there's only tomorrow, but maybe I could do it this way. I could live like God controls tomorrow. Now, this sounds promising, does it not? This is what James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17 says. Now, listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to the city, we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. While you not even know what will happen tomorrow, what is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord's will, we will go live and do this or that. And as it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. Even if anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them. Now, I can appreciate this verse because this oftentimes outlines our lives. Where am I going to go? Now, we have the day off from work on Monday. At least I do, and my wife does. And you know what? My kids are off from school. So we've already planned. We're going to take a little family trip. We're going to put everybody in the car, and we got some things that we want to do. So we're going to take a little day trip and go do something for the day. My son's probably like, we are? Yeah, we don't ever tell the kids this stuff. We tell them about time to get in the car. So we're going to take ourselves a little trip. We've made plans for where I'm going to go. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. We've made plans for what we're going to do. We have a list of things that we want to get accomplished. We have a list of things. But it goes a lot deeper because a lot of times I live my entire life this way. I live my life by a to-do list and what I'm going to get done. And as long as at the end of the week the to-do list is done, then you know what? It's been a good week. But when I get to the end of the week and there's still like five or six items left on the list and I ran out of I start to get stressed. See, because this is how I live my life. How am I going to live? How am I going to take care of my needs? How am I going to pay my bills? How am I going to put gas in my car? How am I going to make this happen? How am I going to make this work out? How am I going to make everybody do this? How is it all going to work out? Isn't this how we live our life? This is the stress. We have it all planned out. We have it all figured out about how it's supposed to work. I could go back and pull out my high school yearbook. Yeah, I do still have it. And you know, they have that section in your senior year where you're supposed to fill out where you're going to be. And if I went back and read that plan to you or where I was going to be at this point in my life, you'd laugh. Because guess what? I'm not even close. I'm in the wrong state, in the wrong city, in the wrong profession. Nothing has worked out like I planned it. And you know why? Do you really know what's going to happen tomorrow? Think about it. Just go back through this week and let's just start on Monday. And you thought you knew how Tuesday was going to work. Did it work out the way you thought it was? Let's go from Tuesday to Wednesday. Did it work out the way you thought it was going to work out? How about Wednesday to Thursday? Did that one work out well? Maybe a little bit. How about Thursday to Friday? Did you get done the things that you thought you were going to get done? Absolutely not, because guess what? Life can turn on a dime. A phone can ring and all of the plans that you made go out the door. Somebody can come down with a sniffle. It's not all that big of a deal, but guess what? It changes everything. The power can go out or the pipes can freeze, and all the things that you thought you were going to do, those go out the window because you know what? It's all about tomorrow. And I can't predict tomorrow. I mean, I can try. I'm hoping that tomorrow the sun comes up, the alarm clock goes off. There's no two-hour delay for my kids, and I stick them on the bus at the right time. And I arrive at work at the right moment in time, and I go through my day, and I have my list of things that I try to get accomplished on a Monday, and I'm hoping it all works out, but am I guaranteed it? Absolutely not. Waynesburg called me at 6 o'clock in the morning and say, there is a two-hour delay, and my whole day is shot because I have to rearrange everything because I hadn't planned for a two-hour. We don't know about tomorrow. But we plan like we're in control of tomorrow. You see, ultimately, God's in control of tomorrow. That's what this verse is talking about. It's talking about there is somebody that knows about tomorrow. There is somebody that has it. And that somebody has a will for your life. He has a desire that you go into tomorrow saying, God, whatever you put in my path, that's what I'm going to do today. I can't tell you how much that would help my life sometimes. If I could somehow wrap my brain around that in reality and not just in a sermon and say, I understand because guess what? Lord, whatever you put in front of me, that's what we're going to do today. Now, I don't work that way. I'm a control freak. I try real hard, but I do. I make my plan. I've already got my to-do list for tomorrow. And I'm hoping that my to-do list fits in God's will because guess what? If not, I'm going to be stressed. But I need to realize God has a plan for my life. And his ultimate plan is not here. It's out there reaching people. God, we need to make God's plan our plan. Now, that's important. You see, sometimes if I would start with the principle, this is what God desires me to do, then I start making my plans around God's plan, how much easier would that work for my life? Sometimes I think God just looks at me and says, go ahead, make your plans, and then you know what? I'm going to show you what the real plan is. And my entire stress in my life is my battle as I try to wrestle control away from God. Now, I was a good wrestler in high school, but I want to tell you something, that's a match I can't win. And so I need to begin to understand that, guess what? God has a plan, and I need to make that plan my plan. And it works that way in the church. God has a plan for the church. And we as a collective group need to make God's plan our plan. Do the things he puts in front of you to do. Man, that's great advice. Whatever God puts in front of you to do, that's what you do. The Apostle Paul had a plan for his life. He did. He was going to rise up in the Jewish church, and he was going to be a bigwig, and all of a sudden, God changed that plan on the dime. And he said, hey, Paul, come with me. You know what? Moses had a plan for his life. He was going to sit out there and herd sheep. I mean, he had already done the prince thing, and he had already done all the other stuff, and he was all happy, and he had a plan. God said, that's not the plan. Come with me. Peter had a plan for his life. He was going to be a fisherman. Man, he had the family business, and he had all the I's dotted and all the T's crossed, and he had a successful business. And guess what? God looked at his plan and said, Peter, come with me. That's what I'm going to ask you to think about. Here is this idea. God has a plan for our tomorrow. Not a plan that I have to live in fear of tomorrow. Not a plan that I have to live like there is no tomorrow. Not a plan that I have to live like there's only tomorrow, but a plan that says God has a plan and is in control of tomorrow. But here is his invitation. Come with me. And we can be like Eep, and we can make all the excuses in the world. I'm not supposed to be out here. I'm not supposed to be doing this. I can't go do this because you haven't met my family yet. It's new. It's different. I don't understand it. And he just puts out the hand and he says, come with me. So I'm asking, are you ready to give your tomorrow to God? See, it's real easy for me to ask for your today. Because today, well, by the time we get out of here, it's about half over. I want to know something. Will you give your tomorrow to God? That day that is not yet fulfilled, that day that is not yet planned out, can you give that one to God? Because that changes your entire perspective. Maybe you're here this morning and you have never actually met God. Let me ask you something. Where is your tomorrow? You've never had an established relationship with Christ. And my question is how are you living for tomorrow? Are you living one of the other three ways that I've outlined? You do understand none of those ways ended well. As a matter of fact, did you notice? They all ended the same way. A person living in fear basically got caught in a rock slide. The man that lived like there was no tomorrow, he died. And even the people that were living like there was only tomorrow, you saw what happened to them too. It says they were cast out where there was weeping and gnashing of teeth. They all ended the same way. The only one that ended up with the good news is the man that decided to say, you know what? I'm going to live like God's in control of tomorrow. And the first step of that is accepting Christ as your personal Lord and Savior. So during our invitation time, come with me. Because I know how to follow Christ. And we'll set you down and turn scripture pages with you. If you're here today, you've made that decision, let me ask you, where is your tomorrow? A lot of times I think a lot of us get caught up in living like there is only tomorrow, and we never think about the fact that, you know what, we as a church, we have a mission. There's something we're supposed to be doing. And God has asked us, while we are here until tomorrow gets here, to be busy doing those things. And those things are all about the people outside of this church. Let me ask you during this time of decision, for you to begin to think, do I really trust God with my tomorrow? Will you please stand?